You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle. Welcome, everybody. As always, Friday, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time here on the nation's number one talk radio station on the internet, LA Talk Radio. As always, I have a wonderful guest, author today, and I'll be talking about that in just a minute. But I want to let you know that if you would like to contact me and comment about anything you hear today, or if you have questions or relationship issues or anything going on, know that I'm here for you. And you can find me at docmichelle@aol.com. That's docmichelle@aol.com. My website, of course, drmichelletherapy.com. All one, drmichelle with two L's, therapy.com. And come on down. Welcome. If you want to call live here on the air, this is a Los Angeles phone number because we are in the entertainment capital of the world. It is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. If you have any questions for me or my special guest today, who is Kathleen Sterling. Hey, Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michelle. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. And by the way, she's the author of a new book. It's really awesome. Now, it's very compelling, the title. I really like it. It's called Sex. Oh, wait, everybody just turned up their volume. Sex. Sex After Death. It's a love story, is what it is. And it's really about, you know, her life. And after her husband's passing, it's a tribute to her husband, Roger. And sort of how you've survived, you know, your husband's passing and tried to get on with your life and all the lessons you've learned from that.
Yes.
So it's an amazing read. And by the way, Kathleen's an award-winning journalist. She's the publisher of three weekly newspapers in Los Angeles. This woman's amazing. I don't know how you do it all, girl.
I have lots of time on my hands these days.
Well, you know, yeah. And she started her first newspaper, by the way, at the age of 22. Whew. And you and your husband, Roger, worked together for 25 years until his passing in 2009. So, and you're still going strong.
Yes.
So,
oftentimes you don't have a choice.
Well, that's true. You really don't. And I just want you to know, I really did enjoy your book, Sex After Death, A Love Story. And again, you'll tell everybody more about what it is inside the book and what kind of inspired you to create this title. And I love the picture on the front. It has the Eiffel Tower and some beautiful little, you know, outdoor bus chairs, I guess, you know,
empty
little benches.
Yes.
Yes. And that's significant for you, too, which we can talk about. But on the inside flap of your book, you are so funny. You're a professional writer and editor and, you know, newspapers, but you say, quote, one day I woke up itchy, bitchy, and horny for a man that wasn't there. So, again, this book really is how you coped with your life after your husband's passing. And it's a funny read.
Good, thank you.
It's really a funny read. You have a great sense of humor, and you and I have spent time together. And I really enjoyed, you know, finding out about that. So let's jump into it. So you say that your book, Sex After Death, is not a widow's guide. It's not a widow's guide, but it's a love story. So can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. The reason I say it's not a widow's guide is it's hard for me to think of myself as a widow.
Yeah.
I was 49 when my husband died. I wasn't 85 with gray hair and five grandchildren. I had a life. I had a marriage. I had just a normal existence that all ended. But it isn't a guide for widows, because when you think of that, you think of people who are at the end of their life. I was
right
in the middle of my life. And so the book had actually started as a journal in the hospital when Roger was dying, and it kept going and kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And the few people that read it, that are allowed to read it at that point, mm-hmm, said, mm-hmm, okay, now you need to go back and explain why.
Yes.
Why this was such a loss, why this was so devastating,
sure,
why his death cut into you so deeply. You have to go back and explain the relationship.
Right.
You have to explain the love story, and that's where it came about. So the book actually starts with his death and then jumps backward and explains our amazing life together and our relationship.
Kind of like the backstory,
yes,
you know,
exactly,
of everything. Now, just to let listeners know what was going on, you and Roger, you were on a trip to Big Bear. And,
yes,
you know, if, in case you're listening, you know, in London or wherever, well, you're probably watching. No, that's over with, huh? The wedding's over with, the big royal wedding. So you're listening in anywhere outside of Los Angeles. This is a resort. It's a very woodsy resort, beautiful lake outside, you know, the Los Angeles area. One morning, you woke up and you were hearing Roger kind of mumbling and
agitated,
and it wasn't like Roger to wake up like that.
No, he slept like the dead.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
anyway, on
yeah,
this morning, I woke at 2:30 and the headboard was banging and he was mumbling and agitated.
Aww.
And I couldn't wake him up, and
yeah,
I couldn't wake him up. And at first I didn't process, and then I jumped out of bed finally because I was scared, turned on the light, and I just knew.
Yeah.
You know, his
yeah
face was drooping and he was trying to get out of bed. Ooh. And I screamed for my brother, who was a doctor.
Good.
And it just went downhill from there. It was the beginning of the nightmare.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you know, the Big Bear part is important because it's at 7,000 feet.
Yes.
And you don't know.
Right.
It wasn't the altitude. Was it the party the night before? Was it the fact that we'd just come back from a long airplane trip? All these things they say can contribute to strokes.
I see.
Or was it just his time?
You
know, he carried
yes
a bum heart. He was 72 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So a combination of factors. But actually, that was probably the worst night of my entire life. The
I
night
bet
he died, mm-hmm, I was prepared.
Okay.
The night he had his stroke came out of nowhere. It was like a shot in the dark.
So he went into the hospital. You got him into the hospital. And was he in a coma for a while, pretty much?
Well, they airlifted him, mm-hmm, down the mountain to Palm Springs, mm-hmm, to Desert Regional Memorial Center.
It's a good place.
It is a good place. You know, Big Bear's just not equipped. You
no
know, it's a small mountain town to handle something of this magnitude. So we got him to Palm Springs, drove down the mountain. He was in the helicopter and they wouldn't let me go. So that was a trauma.
Sure.
So we got there and unfortunately there was nothing they could do for him.
Yes.
You know, the miracle stroke drugs are basically blood thinners. And since he was already on blood thinner,
right,
couldn't give him any more. So basically it was a waiting game. So no, for the first 3 days, he was not in a coma. He was, able to move his hands and
mm-hmm
look at us a little. He was not real cognizant.
Mm-hmm.
But on the
mm-hmm
fourth day, he went into a coma. He had a second
okay
stroke. So,
sure.
You know, that is the brutal part of the story. That
yeah
is the part his kids don't want to read. And
well,
you
right,
know,
sure.
But I thought it was important to include because it tells the gravity of the situation. And it sort of explained the hell I went through and where I had to come back from.
Absolutely.
Because up until that point, we had an incredible life. We traveled. We roamed the world, we ran the newspapers, we met presidents, we had an amazing time, and then in one split second, it was over.
Right. Amazing story. By the way, if you just tuned in, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and I am interviewing my special guest here, Kathleen Sterling. She's the author of the book, Sex After Death. It's called A Love Story, and it certainly is. And it's a healing book for you, but I think it's really helpful for readers because, I mean, they can understand the process of grieving, sort of what you went through, how to get through it. And this show is not really a downer today. This is more a celebration of life because this is what you did. You went through it. You, of course, went through therapy, you
yes
know, and as I really urge everyone to who experiences a loss in their life, because you need to understand the grieving process and not think you're weird or going crazy or there's something wrong with you, because it takes a while.
That is, and I think that's a really important part of
mm-hmm
the book, an important part of going to a grief counselor is you don't know what's normal.
Right.
And all of a sudden you go from a stable, normal, married life and existence where you get up and you take the kids to school and you're running your life and your errands to all of a sudden this roller coaster of emotions where you are so down that you don't want to live.
Right.
And then the days that maybe you're sort of somewhat happy, you feel guilty.
Right.
And it is this enormous highs and lows, more lows than highs. But one of the things a grief counselor did is tell you that's normal.
Yes.
This is all part
Isn't
of the process.
Nice?
Yeah. And you need to know that because really it's a crazy time where you can burst into tears if you see a shoe or
right.
a car or something set you off or you're just running along and you forget for 10 minutes and then you feel guilty because, oh my God, did I forget him?
Yes.
And so it's a process. And what this grief counselor did, several things, is help me realize that the grief process is a process.
Right.
And it isn't you wake up one morning and your life is better. It's no, it's learning to live within this range of emotions. And if you're too high all the time, you're avoiding it. If you're too low all the time, then you need help because you're depressed.
Yeah.
But if you alternate and you fluctuate with these highs and lows, then that's all part of it. And the other thing, you know, is he is the one that I said, one day I woke up itchy, bitchy, and horny. And he never knew what to make of me anyway, because we laughed as much as we cried in there.
Yes.
And so I said, okay, this is something nobody is talking about.
Yes.
Everybody gave me every grief book. I mean, from Buddhism to self-help to religion to the widows and young widows. And every chapter on intimacy was about two sentences long.
Right. Exactly.
My husband died. I was lonely.
Exactly.
My husband died. I was lonely. But 3 years later, I got married.
Yes.
And then my personal favorite, my husband died. I was lonely. So I went to therapy and now I'm better because I became a lesbian and married my therapist.
Right.
None of these are real, you know, experiences. This is not your mainstream, normal, whatever.
Exactly.
And you know, remember, I was 49 years old. I was, you know, I was
young
still alive.
For, yeah. You're not thinking, oh, God.
Right.
No.
But nobody tells you when your marriage is over, your husband dies, so does your sex life.
Right.
And all of a sudden I woke up one morning and I thought, wow, I'm feeling something different, but there's nobody here to scratch that itch.
That's right. No, so, it's true. And this is sort of a taboo topic that has never been written about with a lot of the grief books that you're describing. You know?
It's very funny. I spent an entire night at Barnes & Noble looking through every grief book, and I thought, okay, nobody's writing about this. And believe it or not, I'm a very private person, having just exposed my entire life. But I thought, if I can help somebody with this, because it is normal. I went from a great marriage and a great sex life to absolutely nothing.
Right.
Okay, so now what?
Right, right. No laughter, no cuddly warm fuzzies,
no
just expected that he's going to be there to comfort you, no help with anything, and no sex.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're just, it's what? You know, and besides going through the grief process, it's you're a young woman.
Right.
I mean, here you go. So, and by the way, if you want to call in anybody here in Los Angeles area code or outside of the country, please give us a call here, 323-203-0815. If you've had any similar experiences or would like to ask my guest, Kathleen Sterling, a question. She's the author of Sex After Death. It's a love story. We'll tell you how you can get a hold of the book and get in touch with Kathleen as well after the show. So, you know, it's really informative and helpful. And what, you know, you probably, did your coach, your grief coach, the DABDA, that's the acronym, D-A-B-D-A, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression and acceptance.
Okay.
And, you know, those are supposedly the grief stages that they identified years ago. But it's not, there's no formula.
No, and I think that, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross or whoever wrote
all those,
at that particular point in time, probably that was the model for a typical loss and grief. I don't know that mine was typical. I don't think my marriage was typical, so I don't think his passing was typical.
Right, right.
And I think I never went through denial. I never went through anger. Surprisingly, I was never angry at Roger or at God.
Good for you. No, well, good for you, because that's such a common stage. You know, I see a lot of clients who come in and have losses and they're just pissed.
Right.
I mean, they're like, God, why did God do this? You know, why wasn't it me? Or why wasn't it my neighbor who is my friend, but he, you know, drinks five scotches a night and he smokes like a fiend. Why wasn't it him? You know, yeah, that kind of thing. And it's like,
yeah, but
a lot
you know
of
that, where does that get you in the long run? You're still empty.
Exactly.
You're still alone and you can't go back and change it. And that is the one thing I think you do think is the woulda, coulda, shoulda, should I have put him on, you know, a, oh my God, completely bland diet and no food, no booze, no excitement, no, you know, first of all, my husband was a meat and potatoes guy from Fresno who had pie for breakfast. He loved life. He loved his, you know, glass of red wine. He
there
was not going to change. But the anger portion, I never went through the denial portion. The bargaining portion, I did on the way down the hill to Palm Springs. You know, I made a deal with God that if he'd keep Roger alive, I wouldn't drink wine anymore. Well, obviously that didn't happen. So I'm back to my Chardonnay.
Well, there you go, girl.
But, know, everybody goes through. I have a lot of friends. It's amazing who, not a lot, but I'd say five women who are going through the same experience. And each experience has its commonalities.
Yes.
But everybody's is different.
It really is.
You know, so you can't really put a label on anything. And it changes day to day.
It does.
You know, that's the amazing thing. And,
yes.
And a friend of mine said the words that I live with, and this is one of the things I wanted to impart in the book.
Yes.
It doesn't get better. It gets different.
Okay. Yes.
So you never stop missing them. You never stop realizing your life has changed, but you learn to cope with it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn to move on and make other things count and distract yourself tremendously.
Yes.
I am busy 24/7. I hate going home to an empty house, so I am busy.
Yes, and all your kids are out of the house
now,
huh?
Yeah, so I got hit with a double whammy.
Sure you did.
You know, Katie went off to college and Roger died and I was there with the cat.
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't talk a lot.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. You know, that's absolutely right. So can you tell us a little bit about your love life, you know, and Roger's, you know, relationship with you and your marriage? And
well, when we met, I was 25. He was 47.
Mm-hmm.
My parents wanted to disown me.
Yes,
they didn't understand this at all.
You guys were in love.
We were in love. We met. I met to sell him my newspaper because I was ready to bail out a job offer in Paris. And he convinced me not only not to sell, but to hire him.
Wow.
And I also knew that night I was going to marry him. It was just one of those instant connections. I don't know if we just got each other right away. We were in the same business. I mean, the age difference didn't matter. We were completely different on every, you know, I laugh about it. He was a NASCAR boy. I had season tickets to the Hollywood Bowl.
There you go.
You know, he drank red wine. I drank white. He was a morning person. I'm a night person. As different as night and day. And we just hit it off and we were inseparable from that time on.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Part of it may have been that we're both newspaper people.
Right.
So we both had the same sense of humor and the same warped view of the world.
Yes.
You kind of
have to,
physical attraction was also amazing.
Oh,
you
that's
know, we had
awesome.
Tons
yes.
of sex, tons of relationship.
Yeah.
Even when Katie came along, it only strengthened our relationship because this was something we did together.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly.
And we had an amazing ride, 25 years.
Oh, that is wonderful. And that's the way you have to look at it. That's part of your, you know, lesson that you learned as well from your grief coach. So, you know, in your book, we were talking about bargaining, you know, and you talk about how not to second guess God. You know, you try not to second guess God. What did you mean by that in your book?
It's the going back and reliving the process and saying, what could I have done? You know, what could I have changed fate? And, you know, reality is no. We, you know, there is a divine plan somewhere. And I do believe that whether you believe in God or Krishna or Buddha or whoever, that there is a plan for everybody's life. And when your time's up, your time's up. And Roger carried a bum heart for 15 years. I mean, I thanked his doctor for keeping him alive that long.
Wow.
And, you know, you just can't go back and change it. You know, because if you do, you will spend your life, entire life, looking back with regret.
That's right.
And thinking, I should have done this, I should have done that. You know, one of the things that we did in our life is we pissed away every dime we had and traveled. We went off to see the world. We took every one of the kids. We've been to, you know, Eastern Europe, the Caribbean, South America, Europe. London and Paris were our second homes.
Nice.
And I look back and I think, you know what? That's what you need to do.
Yes.
You need to live life to the fullest.
Exactly.
You can't keep looking over your shoulder. You can't keep saying the what-ifs of the world. And when things happen, you have to accept it and make the best of it and move on. And that sounds very altruistic, like I'm this lovely saint.
No.
And I'm not. It's just reality.
Exactly.
You know, you have to appreciate what you have. I think the couple things that have come out of this book just in the last week since people have read it, mm-hmm. I had one woman call me and say, you know, I have a good marriage.
Yeah.
Not a great marriage.
Yeah.
But I went home after reading your book and I took a second look at my husband and I realized how much we do have.
Yes, exactly.
And another friend of mine emailed me and she said, I just read your book and I called my husband and I said, you're not going to lunch. You're coming home and making love to me because I need you right now.
Wow. That's so cool. This is the kind of book that I would definitely and probably will give to clients because there are people I see who complain about their marriages all the time, women and men,
yes.
who they're not doing this enough or they're not doing that enough. And my goal is to make compromises, to appreciate them for what they are. If they're abusive or they're, you know, substance abusing every night and they're, you know, they're not taking care of themselves, you try to help them as much as you can. But if they're, you know, not willing to do that, they're abusive, whatever, then we talk about, okay, let's get you safe, let's get you in a better place. And no, you don't deserve to live in a relationship like this. But if they're just complaining about, well, he's a slob and he snores. Trust me, I hear this all.
Snoring.
He snores every night. And well, so what? I mean, okay, get earplugs. You know, done, settled. Okay, you know, have one of the little nose patches put on his face, get him an oxygen breather if that's the problem. But, you know, there are so many little things that I think people could learn from your book about, okay, these are doable. Is this a good person for you? Do you have a companionship? Are you good friends? Do you enjoy things together? You know, and if you're not enjoying things together, make time to enjoy things together. This is the kind of book I will give them because they need that help.
Well, and people have to realize you have to go back to the person you married. Why did you marry them?
Yes.
What attracted you in the first place? And what have you lost along the way? Because it's so easy to get caught up in kids and mortgage and day-to-day life and work and getting pissed off because he rolls the toothpaste from the wrong end.
Exactly.
Go buy a second tube.
That's right.
I mean, you know, there are so many simple answers. And I think one of the things people always said to me, my God, you have this amazing marriage and mm-hmm. you guys have such a great time and you're always together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you remember, we were together 24/7, 25 years.
Wow.
We were apart, I think, 11 days.
That's but amazing.
One of the things that kept us going was he was my best friend. But we also worked on our marriage. We really
yes.
spent a lot of time together. We spent a lot of time in bed together. We spent a lot of alone time together. We shared with the kids, but we also took time to appreciate one another. I think we'd both come out of him a divorce, me a bad relationship. We were just at the right time.
Right,
and the other thing is, I think we're just a married couple who managed to stay in love.
Yes, and that's the key. And how do you stay in love? It is work, but it's respect, appreciating. Mm-hmm. You know, having certain things in common with the other person. I mean, you don't have to have completely opposites do attract.
Right.
But it's respecting those differences between each other.
And letting go of the little stuff.
Yes.
I mean, he couldn't stand that I shop. I'm a compulsive shopper. I opened an antique store after he died because I had so much stuff. He ruined the laundry.
Cool.
You know, he destroyed the laundry. We wouldn't let him anywhere near it. I mean, there are things, it's not like we were perfect. He didn't piss me off at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just laughed some of those things off. Or you say, okay, in the bigger scheme of life.
Thank you.
What's important?
Exactly. They said together.
Yes.
Exactly. And that is really wonderful advice for people who do. They complain and, you know, it's the little things. Okay, these are doable. What are you willing to, these are not deal breakers.
Right.
What are you willing to overlook and allow and just love and laugh about? Okay, so he snores. Big deal.
Yeah.
He piles up his clothes. Fine, keep him piled up on the side of the bed and make a joke of it. You know, hire someone to help clean.
Right.
You know, put him in the hamper. Have the hamper right next to his bedroom.
Solve the
side of the bed.
Because the reality is, you know, imagine your life without that.
That's right.
You know, and the little things that probably irritate you now that you would miss. And it is very empty. So that's why I did the store. I wrote the book. I filled up my time.
Exactly.
Because coming home to an empty house and all that. And, you know, they all do it. They all leave their shoes and socks. They all leave, you know, dirty dishes. They all do things that irritate the shit out of you. Sorry.
It's fine.
When,
it's...
you know, you're living together. But when they're gone, you're like, you know, I miss that.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And this is what I'm not saying for listeners to be paranoid all the time. Oh my God, I better be. But you know, it's just reality.
Right.
You know, I better not. look, we have stuff. We have issues. We all have little daily things. We get mad at each other. We argue. We don't talk for a day, and then we clean our act up and go, gee, maybe I was a little harsh. And then you go back, and you know, it's just life. But this is what the appreciation is, what you're pointing out in this book, of just being with this special human being and how you learned how to appreciate all the little, you know, parts of your relationship, even those little arguments. Don't you wish you could still argue with them?
And oh, exactly.
Say, pick up your stuff off the floor. So, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah. You'd want to go back. But
yeah, you do. Yeah. And by the way, if you just tuned in, folks, you're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Kathleen Sterling. She's the author of the book Sex After Death. It is a love story, and it's positive. It's help for you if you have lost a loved one in your life. Doesn't have to be your relationship with your husband or your lover or whatever, your partner. This is about grieving in general and really helping people through it. But this is particularly about your journey and getting through, you know, your husband's passing and being a really young woman and having to sort of create your life again for you.
Reinvent myself.
There you go.
49. You
there
know?
You go.
And that's it. A lot of women do it, whether it's divorce
right.
or death
right.
or a change in career.
Right.
It's taking what life throws at you and making the most of it. Roger's favorite saying was grab life by the balls.
I like that.
And, you know, that's what I had to do. When you finally get past all the minutiae of death and mortuaries and funerals, and I think that you plan funerals to keep your mind off everything else.
Yeah.
All of that takes an inordinate amount of effort. But you wake up one morning and you say, okay, now what?
Yep.
Who am I today? Because who
yep.
I am today is much different than who I was yesterday. So, you know, a lot of the book is doing that. It was finding myself. It was, you know, there's a very funny chapter in there about the fact that, you know, everybody worried about me because they knew Roger and I were so intimate.
Right.
So I had, you know, everybody threatening to give me a vibrator or,
right.
you know, take me out and give me, or set me up on a blind
right.
date.
You're going,
like,
oh,
okay,
gosh.
Please, guys, not,
yeah,
not yet.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you mentioned the cover of the book, and mm-hmm. Paris was very special, and a lot of my healing was going to Paris, and though not everybody can do that, I think change of venue is a good thing when you're in the grief
yes.
process. I
yes.
didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to move out of what I knew, but one of the things a grief counselor said to me is you have to make it your own now. You have to make changes in the house so it's not everything you did together. So
yes.
I ripped up the floors and I put in windows and I made changes. And then I got myself out of there and I went to Paris for 3 weeks to finish the book.
Good for you.
New vistas, you know,
yes.
great memories. But there I was not a widow.
Yes.
There I was not a publisher. There I was not a daughter, a mother. I was just me.
Yep.
You know, and
yep.
it was, you know, you could go to the beach for the same thing or you could go up the coast. Just
mm-hmm.
go someplace where you have time to sort of be by yourself and figure
yes.
out who you are and what you want.
Yes, exactly.
And it's very hard to do that when you're paying the bills and listening to kids
sure.
and having your mother call and
yeah.
solving people's problems and going to work. So going to Paris for me was healing.
Yes,
you
exactly.
You know, I was happy because I was happy.
Yes.
I think that's the biggest thing. I was happy in Paris. I had a lot of memories, so I was sad at times. But in general, it was like the burden had lifted.
Yes.
The shroud that had been over me for the last year
mm-hmm.
sort of was pulled off, and I was able to finish the book. I was able to get closure, and I was able to just wander the streets and buy flowers and buy cheese and,
yes.
and talk to the wine guy and
mm-hmm.
go to the market and bargain mm-hmm. with the little antique ladies. And just, you know what? It was 3 weeks of just me,
yeah.
which I hadn't had at that time. Till that point.
Yeah, just being Kathleen.
Right.
And just enjoy. And this is an important point, is changing the venue, changing the environment. If you can in some way, because what I find is a lot of people after they lost someone, you know, they isolate in the environment where that person was.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know,
they're
in the house.
Up in the bedroom, right.
Exactly. And they're like, oh my God. But I mean, the whole energy is still there too. And it's tough. And some people can't go to Paris, but like you said, take a drive somewhere. Go into the mountains if you're, you know, go to the coast if you're
yeah,
lucky enough
sit
to
on a, beach
a lake
and just
sit on a, you know, go somewhere.
You
don't have to go very far, but just take a few days even
mm-hmm.
just to spend time with yourself and kind of explore your own feelings, because everybody's always going to try to give you advice.
Oh, yes.
And I'm so, you know, and everybody's always going to try this or do this and maybe you should. And it's kind for me, when I lost my father, it's kind of maddening sometimes because you feel, and maybe this is my stuff, but you feel that people just kind of, well, they're doing niceties. They're
they
being appropriate.
They say they understand and they don't.
They don't. they don't have any idea of how you feel. And they try. God bless them. You know, they try.
And it's, you know, and you have to appreciate that they're making the effort. But after a while, you just get tired of the platitudes and the I'm so sorry.
Yes.
This, and you just want to be.
Yes.
You know, you just want to go to the market and do your thing. And, you know, and without buying a bottle of wine with somebody looking at you saying, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, you just, so it was nice. Paris was amazing.
That's
and
so
I've gone
cool.
back. And each time I've taken a little bit of ashes with me and I sprinkle them in our favorite spots.
Oh, wonderful.
So I take Roger with me, which some people might think is a little bizarre.
No,
but
it's cleansing, I
think. Yeah, I think it was really good. Katie and I, right before she went off to college, took his ashes to London and Paris and left them at like five of his favorite spots.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. And it is. It's giving back. It's you know, honoring him and giving back. You know, you and I were talking a little bit about some spiritual experiences that you've had, some sort of, you know, visitations. And I totally believe, you know, in existence after. Yeah. I've read every book on the planet probably about hypnosis regression and the, you know, specialists who supposedly do know that there are your loved ones watching over you, and have had experiences myself with my close relatives who passed. So tell the listeners a little bit about those experiences that you had with Roger after his passing.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I never really gave it much thought because, you know, I had grandparents pass and a couple friends, but nobody as close to me as Roger. And I really do believe that he's still taking care of me. And I've had, you know, several discussions with people after this.
Yes.
And I never really, I don't know how to say it, but I've seen him three times. I mean,
wonderful.
Really standing there. And it was interesting. Once my friends dragged me to Prague. Late November after he died, and I was in the cathedral where we had been previous, and I was kneeling down, and I turned, and there was a group of Japanese tourists, and there in the middle of this was Roger in his travel coat and hat, just smiling at me.
Oh, and, that's cool.
You know, and that was the first experience, and I thought, okay, you know, wow, did I really see that? And then I was with this friend of mine who's an attorney, very conservative man, not given to flights of fancy, very well grounded. And he pulled me aside on the same trip and he goes, can I talk to you? And I thought, oh God, okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he goes, I was sitting on the train on the way back from the concentration camp, whereas Raj was a big World War II person.
Yes.
And he said, we were all kind of dozing and just lulled by the train. And he said, as clear as day in my ear, I heard Roger say, so Steve, what'd you think of it?
Wow.
Now, this is somebody who is no bullshit. No, you know, right. I mean, just, and he looked at me and he goes, am I just off base? And I said, no. And I told him that I'd seen him in the church. And I think, you know, it was a place we'd been together. It was a place that meant something to us. And he did it. And then the next week was Thanksgiving and I was in the kitchen cooking. And all the kids were home and everybody was laughing and talking in the family room. And Katie let out this pure joyous laughter, which I hadn't heard from her in
ages. And Katie is your 22-year-old.
Yes.
28.
So I heard her laugh. She was home from college. She was with her friends, with her buddies, with her brothers, and she laughed. And I turned to look at her, and Roger was standing in the doorway smiling at her.
Oh, that is so
you know,
wonderful.
These were times I was both wide awake.
He's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like, because, you know, I woke up from a sleep one night and I thought he was there and I didn't know. And I talked to him constantly.
That's a wonderful advice, too, to give to listeners, because I think that's very healing.
Oh, I talk to him all the time.
Yes.
And the great place to do it is in the car, because now everybody's on a Bluetooth. So they don't think you're crazy anymore. They just think you're on your phone.
There you go. There you go. Have that thing in your ear, pull your hair back and go, what?
I tell him everything. I sit out on the patio at night and I tell him what's going on. I tell him the gossip and whatever. And then, you know, one day I had a discussion. I said, okay, what the hell do you do all day? You know, I'm running the business. I'm running up to Santa Barbara to see Kate. I'm taking care of my mom. What are you guys doing up there?
Right.
And of course, somebody said, if you figured that out, you'd really make $1 million.
There you go. Well, he's on a new adventure.
He is.
He's in a different vibrational plane of existence, and he's on a new adventure. And probably, from what I understand, in such a good place to let you know that he's okay.
Yeah.
He's doing fine.
I think so. And I think that's, you asked me about the dreams before.
Yes, yes.
And he has come to me a couple times in my dreams. And one of the times he was sitting across a desk like this, you and I are.
Yeah.
And he said, don't worry about me. I have a new job.
Wow. I thought, love that.
Yeah. So, you know, these are the things.
Yes.
And I've had this discussion. Another friend of mine lost her husband. And again, she's 40 years old. So it's tough. But we were talking about signs.
Yes.
You know, her big thing is 22s. She sees 22s and that comforts her because that was their special number and dates and everything.
So that pops up a lot for
her. A lot.
Wow.
And we were saying you have to be open to it.
Yes.
You have to accept it. And whether it's real or not, it's comforting. You know, I see his car everywhere. I see gold Cadillacs. That makes
gold
me happy.
Gold Cadillacs.
Gold Cadillacs. And when I'm talking to him, that's what I see. It's really weird. Or when I'm playing this one song. Real or imagined, coincidence or not, you need something tangible to hold on to remind you that, yes, he was here. There was a life. I did have this before. It's not a dream. So whether it's numbers or colors or places or just something that you can hold on to, because you do, it's a slippery slope.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Of, you know, going back into reality and feeling very lost.
Sure.
Without that, you know, touchstone.
Absolutely. I truly believe that that we do have signs from the universe, and there are little things that do. It's not, you know, the concept of, well, I just bought a new Honda, and now I see everybody has a new Honda the same color as my car. That kind of thing, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
This is more, really, there are signs. If we are, as you said, open to it, there are things out there that are saying, hello, but you have to be in that vibrational frequency of your thoughts in order to allow it to come into your life.
And be aware of the energy. I have a very trippy sister-in-law who talks about ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the books that really helped me was called Ghosts Among Us. And it's about being open to the signs and the energy it takes somebody to manifest themselves or to be aware. You know, and I was raised in a very strong Catholic family.
Right.
And take all that into account. But I think one of the best books somebody gave me was a book on Buddhism, I think, where the philosophy is, we continually exist.
Absolutely.
You know, you're never really born. You never really die. You manifest yourself as a baby when you're ready to be born. And when you've done what you need to do, you're an older person. You pass on. I don't know. I took a combination of all of those and sort of made it work for me.
Exactly.
Because you need to hold on to something.
No, it's really
true. And I still feel him and I still think about him and I still talk to him, and the sex after death part is that, you know, I had to learn how to bring him back to bed with me.
Absolutely.
I mean, you do wake up itchy, bitchy, and horny and
let's
think,
get
okay,
real here.
Climbing the walls, because
exactly.
I went from a great sex life to none at all.
Right.
And so I had to sort of put him back in my head and think about him. And,
right.
And then I was able to do something at least.
Right.
And as my friend said, it isn't as good as the real thing, but at least it gets you through the night.
Exactly.
You know?
No, and I love your candor. I really do. I really appreciate, you know, your approach to this, and it's real, you know. And if anyone has lost a significant other and they have had a really intimate close sex life and, you know, that kind of thing, it's really normal. And this is the kind of thing that a lot of people would feel. You were talking about guilt. Ooh, I'm feeling good today. I have to think about him 24/7 or I'm guilty, you know. Excuse me, you have physiological desires out there.
Yeah.
We have needs. We have warm, you know, fuzzies that we, you know,
and
sexual desire. I mean,
right.
We're normal people. Everyone has them, just about.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say most everybody, and especially if you're 40 or 48 or 49 years old, you're not, you know, 93, which I met a couple feisty 93-year-olds, however. But life goes on, and I think the most important thing about the book, and when you get to the end of the book, is it's never going to be the same as it was, but it's a new normal.
Exactly.
It is a new normal, and you have to create that for yourself. You've got to make your life work for you now.
Exactly. And that's the lesson also, besides cherishing the person, you know, and you know, people can listen and learn from this. You've got to overlook the little issues like we discussed earlier that you know, they're snoring or they're slobs or they've gained a little weight or, you know, you've got to look at the really important parts of your relationship with that person and cherish the moments you have and, you know, overlook those things. And on the other hand, you learn within yourself about what's important for you in your life. Life is really, he's passed on and I will pass on. I will have my time, but you know, life is for the living, and this is a wonderful lesson for me to wake up and pursue my passions, because this is what we're about in this physical body.
Yes.
Is pursuing our passions. And, of course, we have stressors. We have issues with children and business and, you know,
that
we're not
never
feeling
stops.
Too good. We have little back pains or big back pains. We have, you know, we have issues going on in our lives. But we continue to, you know, the lesson here for you, too, I think, was follow your passion. Continue to enjoy your life. You have a wonderful opportunity to expand, you know,
Well,
all of your possibilities.
Finding a passion is paramount. I had a job that I loved, but I have to say the first year I did it by rote, it was by memory. You know, I have a great staff, thank God, that helped because I just was putting in the hours. And it took a while to figure out what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. And I have an amazing network of friends. I have great family, and they're all helpful and they're all supportive. But it really comes down to, okay, what's going to make me happy again? You know, because for a long time, nothing does.
Sure.
I mean, food, booze, work, nothing. Everything sort of you're doing by the numbers just to get through the days. And then, but you have to move on. You have to find something.
Absolutely.
For me, the book was a passion. It was cathartic. It was good. It made me laugh at points. It made me cry a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But as I said, I also opened up an antique store because I had this inventory. And shopping kept me going. Okay, I have to say, you know, I was able to lose myself and go on the thrill of the hunt. So, you know, that was something my sister and I did together.
Yes.
And that's been fun. But you just got to, I think that's the point. You just have to keep moving. You know,
yes.
You can't sit and brood and get stuck and wallow.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
You're allowed to wallow a little bit,
that's
and then
right.
Somebody's got to slap you back to reality.
No, exactly. Hey, by the way, if you just tuned in, everybody, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and I'm interviewing author Kathleen Sterling. She's written a book called Sex After Death. It's a love story. It really is, and it really is a helpful book in exploring her journey after the passing of her husband, Roger, and how she, you know, got on with her life and what she learned and the feelings she went through. And it's lovely because it's very candid, all of the real feelings people go through, you know, after a loss. And by the way, Kathleen, you're an amazing lady. I mean, you're an award-winning journalist. You're the publisher of 3 weekly newspapers here in Los Angeles. Woo! You started your first newspaper at 22. You go, girl. You're a dynamo.
I have a lot of energy.
You're my hero. I don't know. How do you do it?
Caffeine.
Okay, good. I like it. I wish it were just that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but no, you're very humble, and I appreciate that. If you have any advice, you know, to give listeners, any words of wisdom about the appreciation that you have for life. Now, we discussed finding your passions and that kind of thing. What are some of the little tidbits you can give to listeners about dealing with loss, moving on, and possibly the future of their lives? Their lives have not stopped.
No. I think one of the first things, and this is a hard lesson, excuse me, for me in general, is to be good to yourself.
Yeah.
You know what? Busy, especially after something like this, the death of a spouse, you take care of your kids. You're organizing your life. You have to stop and do something for you just to ground yourself. I joined a gym, which I don't go to that often, but
you.
I joined a spa.
Good
so once
you.
A month I go with a girlfriend and we get a massage and a facial and we go to dinner. I try and set aside Monday night where I read a trashy novel or watch TV and I eat whatever I want and, you know, just little things along the way.
We all need to do that, you know.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Learn to accept help when it's offered, and learn to say no when you need to. People are well-meaning. They want to keep you busy. They want to keep you going. And at some point, you can be on the hamster wheel and have to finally say, okay, you know what? I have to stop.
Absolutely.
You know, my thing is I hate going home to an empty house. So I always had something Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'd have Sunday night. I'd collapse and think, why am I so tired? It's because I was running from my problems. So now I'm getting to the point where I can enjoy being home alone.
Good.
Enjoy the time alone. I can scrapbook. I can read. I can do laundry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not running out and buying new underwear because I just can't face doing laundry anymore.
Right.
And that's an important point. I was talking to a friend of mine about this last night, actually, that one of the things nobody tells you when you suffer a loss like this, especially with a spouse where you've been living in the same house and sharing duties and doing things back and forth, that the monumental effort it takes to do the smallest chore.
Yes.
Okay, take out the trash, clean the fireplace, change the lighting.
Right.
Do the laundry. Because, A, you just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Honestly, you don't.
No.
I mean, how important is it if you really do laundry, given the whole scheme of what's just happened to you?
Yeah.
How important is it if the baseboards are clean? Or mm-hmm. if you clean out the freezer? Or you, you know, okay, clean the fireplace. Mm-hmm. Or weed the, deadhead the roses. Because really nothing matters at that point.
Right.
So getting out of bed just to do, oh, God, I've got to load the dishwasher. All of a sudden you think, okay, do I really want to even move?
Right.
So it's right. the little things. And it was really silly because the first couple months, I really took pride in the stupidest accomplishments. I mean, I refied the house.
That's not stupid. That's a smart thing.
No, I know. But I got, I got the fireplace fixed.
Yeah.
But every day I would get up and I think, okay, right. what have I been avoiding? Because
there you
it's
go.
Really easy to just sit there with ennui and inertia, I guess is a better word.
Yes.
And just think, okay, I'm just going to let everything revolve around me, and I just am not going to cope with anything. And that you've got to just get yourself up, get yourself moving. And do one thing that you can be proud of every day.
That's right.
And it can be as stupid as seriously getting the laundry off the bathroom floor and doing it. Because it takes a while to get back into a routine.
It so does.
And then now I'm sort of at the point where I'm accomplishing more things. I'm really happy. Finishing the book was good. I've got some chores now I can do at home.
Yes.
Yes. Attack the back room, which is, you know,
good for
stuff.
You.
But it's that type of thing. So take care of yourself. Take help from friends. If they say, I want to take you to dinner, great. I want to bring you food. I want to, you know, let me run some errands. Say yes, but also learn to say no. No, I really don't want to go out tonight for the third night in a row.
I want to isolate and just feel sorry for myself.
And that's, you know what, that's
okay.
also important. You know, it's now it'll be 2 years in May, and there are nights that I still need to go home. Take the phone off the hook, open a bottle of wine, and cry my eyes out.
Sure.
You know, you
Absolutely.
Still need to reach down and know that that's there.
Right,
I don't do it every hour now. I don't do it every day now, but every week at least.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
You've got to do that. And it is part of purging and allowing yourself to feel. And because when you shut off, that's when it's dangerous, you know, when you lose
bottle it up.
Anything. Right. Relationship, even if someone breaks up with you or dumps you, I mean, let alone passes away like Roger did. I mean, that's what you have to do. A lot of clients, what they do when they come to me sometimes is they when they have a loss in their life, and this is usually with women. You know, they say, I say, what are you doing to help yourself? How are you getting through this? Well, I'm on my OCD. I've cleaned the whole house. I've scrubbed the tile. And that's, of course, wonderful and therapeutic because they're doing something. But as you said, you know, this is their defocus on their emotions. And that's fine because they feel like they have some control in their life because they're scrubbing that tile and they see how beautiful it looks afterwards. So that's control.
Okay, I never did that. OCD has never been one of my big, and housework has never been one of my, like, you know, go-do-it things.
But I'm saying that, you know, that is not a good thing after a while because what you, as you said, what
you're
you have
sublimating,
to do,
you're just
exactly,
avoiding.
Exactly. You have to reach down and really allow yourself and go, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to feel, I'm going to curl up in bed. I'm going to just get through the wave and the up and down emotions that I'm feeling every day.
And it is a wave.
It is.
And in the beginning, it's a tsunami where you're so low. And then you get high because you think, okay, I feel a little better. Now it's down to just ripples.
Yeah, and
there are things that, that remind you and interfere and whatever.
Right.
And you never completely, especially after a relationship like ours, never completely lose that person. You know, but it's not a knife wound anymore.
Sure.
It's a paper cut. It's just this little irritant every day that you're missing them.
Yes. You're so helpful to people. I just love this book. How can people get a hold of your book and get in touch with you? If they'd like to?
They can get in touch with me at the website is sexafterdeath.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the book's available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, AuthorHouse.com. I also have a Facebook page, which I'm 50 years old. I'm not quite sure what to do with, but my daughter set it up for me. So you can, I guess, post something on my Facebook wall.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and I love talking to people. I love talking to women who have lost because I think that if I can just give them a couple things to help them get through it. I had some wonderful friends help me get through it.
Yes.
I had an amazing support system, amazing family.
Yes.
I also just, you know, you have to be a tough cookie.
Right. You really do. And yeah. and allow yourself to get through the grieving process. So, yeah. I mean, that's really allowing. Allow.
Right.
You never know what's going to happen. There's no set rule of feelings. There's no, you know, and also listeners, you know, check this book out because it really, it can elevate even any kind of trauma you're going through. You don't have to have, you know, the loss of a loved one. You can have someone who, like I mentioned, dumped you, or you can have the loss of a job, or you can have your kids go away. You're having empty nest syndrome. You know, you're alone in your life. No matter what age you are, you can be, you know, alone with certain things that you're used to in a routine. But this is a healing book. And it's
a lovely
journey, and I really I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I love it. This is great.
We had so much fun, you know, talking, and I love your book. And you know, my truest sympathy for the passing of your husband.
You sound like
a wonderful guy, and you're a lovely lady. And thanks again so much. By the way, this is On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. You can stay if you'd like on the couch, but I'm leaving because we have CBS News coming up next and more great shows for you here on LA Talk Radio. Once again, my guest, Kathleen Sterling, author of Sex After Death, A Love Story. Have a good day, everybody. Take good care of yourself. And as I always do say, take care of yourself first. See, and then you'll be great for everybody else. That's the way it works. Bye-bye.
Flashing rays of colored light.